The most trusted and longest-running sports talk show in Tennessee. From the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting, this is Sports Talk with John Wilkerson and Jimmy Hines on Sports Radio WNML.
Hour number three as Sports Talk begins. I'm John Wilkerson. Vince Ferrara pinch hitting for Jimmy Hyams. It is an absolute pleasure as we help Mike Keith celebrate his 30th wedding anniversary with wife Michelle. So Mike is out and about and just, we hope, having a great time. But we are so pleased to be joined by Titans radio analyst, former NFL head coach Dave McGinnis, who joins us for this hour. He joins us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline. Coach, how are you?
John, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on. Hey, anytime I get a chance to at least walk in the shadow of a broadcasting great like Mike Keith, I will take that opportunity. So I'm very glad to be on with you guys.
Well, we very much appreciate your time, and also can't have you join us without just stating once again that the teaming of you and Mike is fantastic for Titans fans, and it was one of the things that missed most with, I was not aware that when you get to a certain point in the playoffs that the regional the local radio does not get to broadcast the games. You weren't there. You were actually part of a viewing party in Nashville for Titans Chiefs when they were deciding the AFC Championship. But I think you and Mike are fantastic. You guys have great chemistry and love the way you guys work together.
Well, that's very kind of you to say, and that's a huge compliment coming from someone with your experience in this business. You know, when Mike Keith and the Titans called me four seasons ago now, you know, and asked if I was interested in doing this, I had had a couple of opportunities presented to me in Los Angeles about doing this, you know, because I had just finished up my tenure there, you know, with the Rams. But the draw of Nashville and being able to come back here, you know, I spent eight years here as a linebacker and assistant head coach with Jeff Fisher. Absolutely loved Nashville. I'm originally from Texas. And so, I mean, I was in all my travels in my 31 years of coaching in the National Football League, I was just happy to be back to a place where they said y'all again. And to me, the fit here in Nashville was so good. And then when I came back and then, you know, was able to visit with Amy Adams Strunk and the whole front office here at the Titans and just see how the organization was. Guys, I've been involved in this league for 35 years now. I know good from bad, and I know this was a great situation. And, you know, and to be able to be paired with Mike Keith and the whole Titans radio crew, I mean, it could not have worked out better. You know, full disclosure, after that first year, it gave me such great exposure in this business. I've had offers to go other places ever since I've been here, but, you know, I've bypassed all of them because I love the environment here. And then plus, guys, I've got the added bonus. You know, I do coach-to-coach with Coach Doug Matthews, you know, every year during the season for 20 seasons, covering the Vols and covering the NCAA football. So, look, I grew up in West Texas, you know, out in the Friday Night Lights country. You know, football has been part of me for my whole life, and this is a dream for me to be able to do this. And then to be able to come on with you guys, come on, guys, this is perfect.
And we can go ahead and share that if you weren't already aware that for more Titans and NFL conversation and analysis from Coach Mack, you can always download the official Titans podcast. Look for the OTP wherever you load your podcasts. And right before Mike took a little break to, again, celebrate his 30th anniversary, which, way to go, Mike and Michelle, they were able to get what was, I think, a fantastic virtual event. How much did you enjoy raising money for the Leukemia Lymphoma Society with the fact that after certain bids were reached, after certain marks were met, that you and Mike would share specific stories or talk about specific topics? How much did you enjoy that, Coach?
Well, I loved it. I absolutely loved it. You know, I was involved with the LLS campaign, you know, last year. Of course, Mike Keith had been involved. You know, he was a LLS Man of the Year at one time, ran a very successful campaign. And then last year, Jonathan Hutton, who was on our Titans radio crew, you know, who is one of the hosts, you know, here with on Titans radio and also you know, one of the hosts here for Cumulus. He had asked me to do several events in his fundraising campaign, which he was able to raise a lot of money. And so when Mike Keith and, you know, asked me to do this, along with Mickey Ryan and his wife, Christina Ryan, who heads up that campaign here, I was more than happy to jump on. And really, what they asked me to do is we were on Zoom. I've become a Zoom and a Skype broadcast expert these last 5 months, guys. I mean, it's been amazing. But anyway, we got on there, and then, as you said, I think they had over 1,000 people on Facebook that were watching, and then they would bid for stories. And Mike and I would just, you know, share some stories. And look, after 35 years in the National Football League and basically, you know, 40-plus years in the coaching business, I've got plenty of stories to share, and I was more than willing to do that to be able to help them raise money. It was a lot of fun, and then they took some part of it, and then Amy Wells and the Official Titans podcast were kind enough, you know, to let Mike have some space on the OTP to share just some of those stories. We raised a lot of money for a good cause, plus it was a lot of fun. And as I said, guys, anytime Mike Keith asks me to do anything, you know I'm all about that.
Coach, obviously you have great passion and enthusiasm to talk about the Titans and talk about football, but I'm sure a lot of questions you get thrown at you is about how the season might look like, the pandemic, things like that. Has that grated on your nerves a little bit? Are you tired of answering questions about whether you're going to have football and how it's going to look like?
That's not, no, not at all. Because look, when this first started, you know, I went to the combine. You know, of course, you know, the Titans send me to the combine every year, so I'm at the combine, and I've been at that combine in Indianapolis, you know, ever since it started there during my coaching career, and I've continued that since I've done my work here for Titans Radio. And so anyway, after we got back from the combine, you know, everything was going normal. Just about the time I got back, 2 days later, we had the tornado, you know, rip through Nashville here and middle Tennessee, and then the pandemic hit. And so everything was turned upside down at that point. And so basically, we all had to recalibrate, right? The league had to recalibrate. Everybody had to recalibrate what their offseason was going to be like. And part of that involved, you know, doing everything by Zoom, everything by Skype. And then, so what I found out was, because a lot of these radio stations and podcasts across the country, you know, weren't able to be able to connect with their coaches or the scouts at their various clubs around the country, because they were all very busy trying to figure out how that draft was going to work. They knew that I did that kind of work. They knew that I had a lot of experience, you know, with the league. So I ended up doing a lot of radio, you know, hits by Skype and by Zoom, and then podcasts by Zoom across the country, just answering some of those questions as the landscape continued to change. And so, no, I really don't get tired of it at all, because I think it's very relevant to what we are doing. You know, I've still got a lot of contacts in this league that I'm able to talk with at all various levels at any time and kind of get an idea of where things are starting to be. But this pandemic, you know, is so fluid and it's so ever-changing that I never really get tired of talking about it, because I think we're all just trying to adapt to the information we are getting and to see how it's going to be to be able to start the NCAA season and to see where it's going to be able to start the National Football League season. So I really don't get tired of answering questions at all about it, because our fans want to know, and our fans are the lifeblood of everything that we do.
So, Dave, what do you think about the criticism Tom Brady has received for working out? And I'm in Tampa right now, well, seeing my family, and I know exactly where he's working out at Berkeley Prep with some of his teammates. I'm sure he's not the only one in groups that are doing this. The Players Association is frowned upon it and speaking out against it. What do you make of players doing it on their own, even though they don't want them to do their private workouts?
Well, first of all, I mean, you know, they're not mandated to not be able to do anything. You know, the one thing about it is, I think it's all, you know, an individual basis. And of course, you know, when you've missed as much as everybody has missed in this off season, this time in the National Football League, guys, look, I coached, you know, for a lot of years, 31 years in this league, and I've gone from coaching in this league from my early years with the Chicago Bears, where you had no off season because you had no salary cap, you had no free agency, and the first time you ever saw your players after the season was a 3-day mini camp after the draft, to then, you know, I've gone through the evolution of the salary cap, of free agency, where now the National Football League, you are turning your roster over at least 32% every year. So now free agents and rookies are going to have to be able to be a viable part of what you do the next season, and they're very critical to your success. And so the time that you have in the offseason with the OTAs and the offseason programs that have now been mandated, you know, by the collective bargaining agreement, those are important times. Well, you've missed all of that. I've been involved in a lot of different disruptions in the National Football League in my career, from a strike in 87 to the lockout in 2011. I was a head coach, you know, in Arizona during 9/11 when our country went through that. And so I've been through a lot of disruptions, but never anything that was so all-encompassing nationwide and worldwide and economic-wise as this is right now. So we're all in a different territory. But I do know this, that these players, especially these veteran players, they know how important it is to be able to be ready to go when a training camp starts. And so the inactivity, you know, is not good either. And I also understand, you know, the NFLPA's stance on it also, because you've had some players that have already tested positive, and some of it has been because they've been out socially, but some of it has been because they have gotten together. So I think that what they're trying to do is just is be very cautionary, but there's not anything mandatory to it. And I don't think anybody is doing it, if they are doing it, you know, maliciously at all. I really don't. And so, but this falls under the category of we're still in untested territory, and nobody really knows, because the landscape is consistently changing daily with us in this business. You guys know it. I know it. Our listeners know it too.
You mentioned the Zoom meeting and the Zoom coaching that's happening in professional football, in college football as well. Jeremy Pruitt's actually pointed to the fact that he doesn't think that freshmen will be any farther behind this year with a chance to contribute because of the coaching and the football teaching that they've been able to do through those Zoom meetings. Explain the value, you think, for the National Football League, especially, that those Zoom meetings are having right now.
Well, I agree with Coach Pruitt in this, because I've talked to a lot of coaches around the National Football League about the Zoom meeting. And to begin with, as I said, they didn't know how it was going to work out either. It was just like when the National Football League guys, when we did our whole draft, you know, this year by Zoom, you know, when that was first proposed, everybody, you know, took a step back and went, wow, I can't believe we're going to be able to do this. How is this going to happen? Well, it turned out to be very successful. And I think that's the same thing that coaches found out with these Zoom meetings. Now, what you are, and they've gotten very creative with these Zoom meetings, you know, in the National Football League, just as I'm sure, you know, a lot of your Power Five schools have. I know they have. I've talked to some of those coaches too, because it's much more than just having them on the screen. I mean, you can, the things you can do now, I've been amazed. I mean, because I, as I said, I've become a Zoom expert since March, you know, of doing this. I've done podcasts all across the country. You know, I just, you know, did a huge fundraiser by Zoom. I've done a big clinic by Zoom, you know, with high school and college coaches down in Texas. So the thing that I'm saying is as organized and creative as you can be, that's what you can get out of it. And my feedback from all the coaches I've talked to about it is they felt like they've gotten very, very good meeting time, you know, with these players, gotten to know these players, the ones they didn't know. They've gotten to all of that. The thing that you miss, guys, is when you finally get your cleats on the grass. And that's important, because, you know, eventually it comes down to, I mean, this is a huge people business, because coaching is teaching, and sooner or later, you know, you've got to have the eye-to-eye, face-to-face teaching to be able to refine some things. But I think with what everybody was presented, I think the Zoom meetings, with as creative as everybody got with them, I think they've been very, very beneficial. I do know this. It's much more beneficial than if you would have not had it. If you would have not had it, it would have been extremely hard. Now, freshmen in college, rookies in the National Football League, they're going to be behind, just because it's a huge jump from high school football to the NCAA Power Five schools. It's also a big jump from the NCAA to the National Football League, but at least mentally they've gotten an idea, and they've met their teammates already on these Zoom calls, and they've gotten associated and clearly understand who and how their coaches are going to interact with them during these times too. So I think it's been very beneficial, and now hopefully they'll be able to catch up as soon as they get cleats on the grass.
Our guest is Coach Dave McGinnis, Titans radio analyst, former NFL head coach. We've got more with Coach coming up, and can't wait to hear his side of the story. How can you be an NFL head coach and not know it? That's next as you listen to Sports Talk on 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Because we have a transmitter and you don't. 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Sports Talk continues. I'm John Wilkerson. Vince Ferrara pinch hitting for Jimmy Hyams, and our guest this hour is a former NFL head coach, and he's now Titans radio analyst, Dave McGinnis. And before we get to our conversation about his very, well, I can't say brief tenure, as the, all I'll say is Sports Illustrated, SI.com. You've got to see this story. We'll talk about what was an incredible ordeal in mere moments, but Mark has joined us with a question for Coach. Mark, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
Doing well, thank you.
I was going to ask Coach McGinnis if you've ever met Joe Bugle, because I lived in Arizona when Joe Bugle coached the Arizona Cardinals, and I remember when he coached the Redskins offensive line, so I didn't know if you ever knew Joe Bugle.
Mark, thank you, first of all, for calling. It's great talking to you. And the answer to that is absolutely yes. Bugs, you know, as we called him, look, I coached in the league for 31 years. Bugs was in the league also for about 30 years. I knew him very, very well. I knew him as an assistant coach at various places, one of the most revered offensive line coaches in the history of this league, and also knew him as a head coach. He was the head coach at Arizona. And he replaced Gene Stallings. Was one of the first. There's a pretty unique group of that were head coaches at the Arizona Cardinals in a pretty short span there, from the time they moved from St. Louis to Arizona and then had to play in Sun Devil Stadium. That was a very unusual time for that franchise. Starting with Gene Stallings, then to Joe Bugle, then to Buddy Ryan, then to Vince Tobin, then to myself, then to Dennis Green. We all kind of fought the same obstacles. It was a very tough time, and if you look at all of our records, they pretty much coincided with how difficult that franchise was during those years until we were able to get a stadium built. But that's a whole nother story. I've been asked by about three different entities to do a book. That would be about three chapters in my book of what we all went through there. But Joe Bugle was very – yes, I was a good friend with Joe Bugle, knew Joe very well. When I got the job at Arizona, Joe Bugle lived in – he lived in Fountain Hills there in Arizona where his permanent home was, even though he was still coaching, you know, then at the Redskins for a second time. Anyway, Bugs and I would talk a lot. And a great football coach, but a great human being. And he and I would commiserate about a lot of things, just about, you know, some of the challenges of being a head coach for the Arizona Cardinals organization at that time. But I knew Bugs very, very well. I was very sad to hear of his passing. I knew that he had been in some declining health these later years. But Joe Bugle was the essence of what a good football coach and a good person is in the National Football League. He was outstanding. We're going to miss him. God bless Bugs and his family.
I agree. It was good to talk to you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mark, we very much appreciate the call. And so we do have to get a break here in just a second, but why don't we get the ball rolling? It is, what was it like, first of all, to revisit the story of what was the potential for you to become a head coach in the NFL for the first time, and that was to take over the Chicago Bears? What was it like to have this opportunity, as is highlighted in this wonderful piece that, again, folks can find at SI.com?
Well, I mean, this thing comes up every year. I mean, that, you know, the Chicago Tribune runs something. I mean, it's part of the Chicago Bears and NFL history in Chicago forever. And, you know, I was the head coach for 6 hours. I just didn't know it for three. But, I mean, it was a look, guys, it was, again, these people that want me to do the book, as I said, you know, I told these stories out in L.A. when they met with me out there to do it. And I'll do this book when I'm completely done with the National Football League. But I started telling this story, and they all just turned off their tape recorders and went, "Are you telling us the truth?" And I said, every bit of it's the truth. Pretty unusual. Look, that was my dream job. I'd worked there for 10 years. It was a great opportunity, but it was just sad to me the way it ended up. But I got no hard feelings and bitter about it, but I do know this. probably nobody else can say. They've not only been undefeated as a head coach of the Bears, they've never won a game as a Bears head coach either.
I'll tell you what, we'll get a break. When we return, we'll find out what that was like, also what it was like to work for Mike Ditka, and, of course, we'll talk more about the Titans in the NFL. If you have a question or comment for Coach, 656-9900, 656-9900. This is Sports Talk on 99.1, The Sports Animal. Sports Talk continues. I'm John Wilkerson. Vince Ferrara sitting in for Jimmy Hyams, and we are pleased to be joined by Titans radio analyst, former head coach of in the NFL, Dave McGinnis, as he joins us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates hotline. So, Coach, to set the scene, Dave Wannstedt had his shot at keeping the Bears up there and competitive. They decided to make a change, and you were part of what was a pretty impressive group of candidates that were vying for the position. You have a great interview, an interview that was cut short because the Bears had to meet with the mayor to talk about some changes or expansion to Soldier Field. And so it was thought that you were going to pick up with the interview the next day. But lo and behold, you didn't hear anything from the Bears, but you started to hear from folks around the game. What were they telling you?
Yeah, well, that thing changed. I mean, that thing changed pretty quick. First of all, I mean, it was a great honor to be asked. I'd coached there for 10 years and had had various chances to leave during those 10 years, but we had a very successful run there, and I knew I was on a pretty good track to at least get some interviews to be a head coach in the National Football League. Then I left and went to Arizona as a defensive coordinator, and in our third year there, you know, we were able to get in the playoffs and then beat Dallas in a playoff game for the first playoff victory that the Cardinals organization had had in 51 years. And so we had some things rolling pretty hot, so I was a pretty hot candidate. And, yes, I was asked to interview. Mark Hatley was the general manager at the time, who I'd had some history with. But, yeah, I mean, the people that they had interviewed, and this had been narrowed down, I mean, there were some pretty impressive names on there. And I was just glad to get a chance to go back because, as I said, I had spent 10 years with the Bears, had a very close relationship with the Bears organization, with the McCaskey family, who is the ownership there, who are the descendants of George Halas. I mean, I loved it there. And so when I went back to interview, I was the fifth of five to interview. And really, you know, I was prepared because, you know, I had been preparing for a head coaching interview if it had come up for about three seasons. And so anyway, so, you know, I went in there and was just very honest, and it was just myself. And part of the interview involved, you know, a press conference with the Chicago and the national media. I mean, it was a big deal. They put everybody that interviewed there through it. And, of course, I'd been there 10 years. I knew everybody there. I was very comfortable with it. And I did, you know, did very well. Everything was going really, really great, really smooth. And what originally had been planned was is I was going to be the last one to interview. And then I was going to go back out to Phoenix because I had just traveled from Mobile, Alabama, to Chicago for the interview. Then I was going back to Phoenix, and then Michael McCaskey, you know, who was running the Bears at the time, was going to make his decision out of the five candidates and then alert us and then tell us, you know, who had been selected, who had not been selected the next week, sometime in the next week. And so I was going in there with that in mind. And so the interview, as you said, and the article that John Glennon did was tremendous. And he had called and asked me if I'd be interested in revisiting this. He had just done a great article at Sports Illustrated on the Titans, you know, pursuit of Peyton Manning in free agency, which was a very interesting story. And I said, sure, because John Glennon's a tremendous writer. And I said, sure, I'll be glad to do it. I've always shared the story. I've always been very open about it. So anyway, and so, you know, I was asked, you know, after the press conference, we had had some downtime with some lunch, and we started in on the second part of the interview, and then, you know, Michael McCaskey said, look, I'm going to have to go downtown to start visiting, you know, about the stadium. They were getting ready to begin to redo Soldier Field, you know, as to what those negotiations were going to be. Could you stay overnight and we'll finish it tomorrow? And I said, well, sure. I mean, I've got the weekend. And then plus, you know, I'm just going back to Phoenix anyway. I knew everybody there in Chicago. I had plenty of people, you know, they knew I was up there interviewing that I could, you know, go out to eat dinner with. And so anyway, that's how we left it. And so he said, you know, we'll come get you the next morning. I was staying in a really exclusive hotel there on the North Shore of Chicago under an assumed name. I mean, this was the whole Batman and Robin thing.
Nice.
Where they didn't want anybody to know. They didn't want anybody to know where you were. So anyway, and so I go there and I go to dinner and come back and I get up about 7 in the morning and take a shower and get dressed, put my coat and tie on, figure, you know, I'm going to go back in, finish this thing around 8 or 8:30 and then catch a flight out here later this afternoon or this evening and then go back to Arizona and wait to see how it goes. Well, I'm sitting in the hotel room waiting for the call. First call I get from Leslie Frazier, who Les Frazier has gone on to a very successful career as a coach in the National Football League, both as a coordinator and a head coach, you know, at a couple of franchises. And anyway, Les had played there for the Bears, so I knew Les very well. And I was going to hire Les on my staff. You know, I'd preliminarily, you know, put out feelers to put a staff together. And he was you know, on the top of my list as a secondary coach. And in fact, my coordinator was going to be Larry Marmee, you know, a former Tennessee Vols coach. You know, Larry and I were very close. He had worked for me there at Arizona as a secondary coach and then as a coordinator when I became head coach. So anyway, I had a pretty good group put together. And so Les calls and says, hey, coach, look, I think I've got a chance. He was working for Ron Turner at the time at the University of Illinois. He was recruiting the south side of Chicago. He said, look, coach, I know we had talked about maybe I'd have a chance to work for you. I've got an opportunity right now, a job that's offered to me in the National Football League, but they say I've got to take it now. So could you give me a little idea? You know, if you were going to hire me, let me know that so I can make – I said, Les, look, I can't in good faith tell you to turn down a job when I don't have a job yet for you. I told you it would be a possibility. He said, coach, it's been on the radio for 2 hours. You're the head coach. And I said, what? He said, oh, yeah. He said, there's a press conference at 11. You're the head coach. And I said, Les, first thing I've heard about it, I said, first thing you need to do, if you have an offer in this league, take it, because I can't in good faith tell you not to because I don't know what's going on. Hung up the phone, and then, you know, it started to spin a little bit. Mike Singletary called me, who, you know, I'd coached for 7 years there. He was living there in Chicago at the time, had not gotten into coaching yet. He was just calling to congratulate me. He said, congratulations, coach. I'm so excited. We're all excited, you know, that you're going to come back. We think it's great. The players do. You know, all the ex-players, the Bears. I'm coming to the press conference. I said, Mike, what are you talking about? I just talked to Les. He said, coach, you're the coach. It's been on the radio. You're the head coach. And I said, nice to know. Okay, you know, and so about that time, I said, look, Mike, I don't know what's going on, but I'm gonna hang up here. I've got a few calls to make, as you can imagine. And I said, I don't know anything about this. And he said, oh, Lord. So anyway, then Mark Hatley, who's the GM, called and said, Mike, where are you? And I said, well, Hat, I'm still in my hotel room. He said, nobody has contacted you from the Bears this morning. And I said, no. I said, I haven't heard from anybody since you dropped me off from dinner last night. He went, oh, God. He said, just a minute. He hung up. And so anyway, so it started to spin from there, you know. And so, look, basically, you know, I'd been announced as the head coach before the job was even offered to me. And so you can imagine it was a little bit unusual when I went up to that office and all the satellite trucks are up there. I mean, it's a big deal now being the head coach of the Chicago Bears. And so, you know, once I finally was able to get through all the people and get upstairs and shut the door and visit with Michael McCaskey with a picture of his grandfather, George Halas, hanging there. I said, look, I don't understand what's going on here, but this isn't quite the way I thought this was going to go. And so anyway, it got to the point where, look, guys, and really in our lives, of course I wanted to be the head coach of the Bears. I mean, it was a chance of a lifetime, but you've also got to understand that, you know, I was responsible for 15 men, their families, and some of the things that were presented to me when we started talking about it were going to be beneficial to me, but wouldn't have been very beneficial to 15 men and their families I was going to be responsible for moving up there, thinking they had a certain amount of guarantees and knowing that the truth was that with the initial offer and the way the contract was presented, you know, without even talking, the money was never the problem. But when it was presented to me that he wanted a buyout at the end of the second season if things didn't go well, and things weren't going to go well for a while because they weren't very good. That's why they made a coaching change, right? And right. so and, and And he said, look, you'll get this much money as a buyout. And then, look, I could have been the head coach of the Bears, and I could have had all that power, position, and money. I'd have been fine. Those other 15 guys and their families, I mean, you move up there for 18 months. That's not right, and that's not fair. And so it started there and then proceeded to go downhill because I said, look, this is not the way I envision this. My relationship with this organization, with you, has been nothing but stellar. I don't understand this. So anyway, they kept putting it off. ESPN had a blank podium going for about 6 hours on TV, you know, and Brian Harlan, who's Kevin Harlan's brother, was our PR director at the time. I mean, guys, it started spinning pretty fast. But at the end of it, when I finally decided the next day, you know, because Ed and Virginia McCaskey, they were in Florida. They called me, said, please, we don't know what happened. We want you to be our coach, dot, dot, dot. And so and this, then I agreed to stay overnight. We talked about it some more. But when it starts off like that, I mean, you know, that's a very big job, being the head coach of a corporation like the Chicago Bears, especially at that time. Things have to be pretty well lined up when you start, because if things aren't getting off on a level footing when you start, you don't have a very good chance, you know, all the way through. And so, you know, when I decided to walk it, I tell you what, it was a hard decision, but it wasn't hard. You know, I grew up in West Texas, and my grandmother always told me when I left the house, just remember, David, there's no right way to do the wrong thing. And so, you know, I weighed all of that stuff, and it just wasn't right. And so when I walked it, the thing that was gratifying to me was the support that I got from the National Football League, from the league office on down, and throughout my career was tremendous, because they knew that I made a stand on principles that was pretty difficult to make. But as I said, I mean, it's a very unique story. It's a very unique story in the National Football League history of hiring head coaches. And it's also a very unique story in the history of the Chicago Bears. So, as I said, and I've done a lot of speeches on it, and, you know, every time I start out with saying, look, I interviewed for 3 head jobs in this league, guys. I got 2 of them. I was head coach of the Bears for 6 hours and didn't know it for 3. I got the head job at the Arizona Cardinals. Now, myself and Jim Haslett and John Fox and Gary Kubiak, we all interviewed for the New Orleans Saints head job at the same time, you know, with the late Tom Benson, and Jim Haslett got that job. So anyway, look, I've had a very blessed career. Think about my career, everything I've got to do coming from a small town in West Texas, interview for 3 head jobs in the National Football League, be named the head coach twice in the National Football League. I've coached on teams of 8 NFL Hall of Famers in my career. I've worked for 2 NFL Hall of Fame coaches, Mike Ditka, Mike Munchak. I mean, and now I get to work with a Hall of Fame radio broadcaster and Mike Keith. Come on, guys. How fortunate have I been in my career?
We will get a break. That's Dave McGinnis, and you can see and you can read the story at SI.com. We'll get a break. We've got a final segment to this hour of Sports Talk coming up. And, of course, if you have a question for Coach, 656-9900. With Vince Ferrara, I'm John Wilkerson. This is Sports Talk on 99.1 The Sports Animal.
99.1 The Sports Animal. It sounds just as good on your car radio as it does while you're working. 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Segment to hour number 3 of Sports Talk, a final segment with Dave McGinnis, Titans radio analyst, former NFL head coach, as he joins us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates hotline. I'm John Wilkerson with Vince Ferrara. Vince?
Coach, wondering what your thoughts are on the wide receiver position other than A.J. Brown, who had that unbelievable rookie year last year. You size up that position after him.
Yeah, well, you know, Vince, and it's a very relevant question, because we haven't been able to see on the grass any of these new guys. Now, you know, with Corey Davis and Adam Humphries, those are your top 3 receivers. We know what they're going to do, but now, you know, what they're going to do, you know, their replacement for Tajae Sharpe is going to have to come from one of this group of players now that are brought in at the wide receiver position. You're looking at some undrafted free agents. You're looking at, you know, you're looking at some guys that have been on the squad last year that were able to contribute a little bit during the year. But to be very honest with you, and I'm always very honest, you know, with our Titans fans, just like, you know, when I'm doing coach to coach, I'm always very honest with the Vols fans about, you know, personnel and what's going on. We don't know yet until we're going to be able to see, you know, what these guys can do once they get cleats on the grass. And so that was going to be a very, very big part of this offseason. And look, the Titans are fortunate in this. They return about 79% of their starters, you know, offensively and defensively. Offensively, especially, they return every starter except for their right tackle. But some of these backup positions, you're going to depend on not only some draft choices, but some undrafted players that John Robinson and his staff have vetted very heavily. But you need to see them now within the confines of what you're going to do, and you need to see them in person be able to take the instruction that we talked about in our earlier segment off of these Zoom meetings, onto the grass and onto the field. So really, I would be telling you something that I really don't know, because normally I get to watch every practice that they have. Well, they haven't had any practices yet. If I'm able to come back on your show sometime, you know, after training camp has started, I will be able to give you more, and our listeners, more of an idea of who these guys are and how they're going to start trying to fit into these backup roles. But right now, if I told you something, you know, definitely, it would not be true, and I will never tell you something that's not true. I don't know right now.
One more what-if question. I realize you haven't seen them on the practice field, but I think it's a little bit narrower in the options. What do you think is the better case scenario for this Titans offense? Is it Dennis Kelly winning that right tackle job to give Isaiah Wilson some extra time to develop, or is it Wilson getting that starting right tackle spot to give Dennis Kelly the opportunity to get back into that swing role he's so good at?
No, I can answer that definitely. It's Dennis Kelly starting. And I know this, you know, after all of my years of coaching, that's why you layer your personnel like they've layered it. And they knew that they were going to go after a right tackle in this draft. And they drafted the right guy. But you know, Dennis Kelly has been a starter in this league. He has proven that he can do that. He will be the starting right tackle when this season starts. And going back to what we talked about, Vince, in the first part of this interview about the lack of being able to get these rookies in early and to be able to get them in your building and be able to get them some personal work. I mean, that will give Isaiah more of a chance to be able to assimilate. Now, he's got the physical skills and the tools that it takes, but to learn the nuances of what it takes to play a position in the National Football League is much different than it is, you know, at the NCAA. The two places where you can really come in and to me, in my humble opinion, after my 35 years in this league, where I've seen players come in and play quicker as a young player without a lot of work, running back is one of them. Okay, running back is one, because you've got some innate skills, and basically a lot of your run schemes and a lot of your blocking schemes are the same. But when you start talking about the offensive line, or you start talking about a receiver position, you particularly go to a quarterback position, you start talking about even defensive positions, because the game is different, because the field dimensions are different. So the best case scenario, the case scenario that they will use, Kelly will be the starter when this season starts. Now, does that mean that Isaiah will not be a starter before the season ends? Not at all. But I can answer that question, I think. And again, I'm not in any meetings, but I've done this for a long time, and I think that's the way they'll approach this to begin with.
Coach, what do you think of Cam Newton making his way to New England?
Well, I think it's a good move. I mean, it's a good move by them, because, look, all those AFC East opponents, when Tom Brady left, you could sense they were just like sharks circling a lifeboat. Okay, they thought, all right, Brady's gone. Now we've got a chance to go in there and unseat this. You know, do we know whether Jarrett Stidham can do this? Do we know? I mean, so now this, at least you've got, you know. And Cam, look, he had a Liz Frank issue, he had a shoulder issue, but we know that he started and won a lot of games in the National Football League. In 2015, he was the MVP of the league. And so all of a sudden, you're looking at them in a little different light. And Bill Belichick and Josh McDaniel, you know, they made this move. I think it was a great move. And look, here's what they give up. Basically nothing to get him in there. And it was also a great PR move at the time, because think of this. you guys are in the PR business, PR 101. They made that announcement at the same time that they were getting sanctioned by the league for filming the Bengals-Browns. You know, I mean, that's that whole seesaw thing with your PR where you balance the bad with the good. I think it's a good move, and I think they will benefit from that. And all of a sudden now, I think your AFC East opponents, who felt like they had a better chance now twice a year against the Patriots, are starting to take a little bit different look at it, just in my opinion.
Coach, we really appreciate all the time. It's always great to catch up with you, and you're always so generous to join us and pick some college football games in the fall. We hope we get to do that again. But can you tell us what the most recent or what the next official Titans podcast might be that you're involved with?
Well, I'm not involved with this one, but the last one that Mike, Keith, and Amy Wells put up was just kind of a synopsis of what we've gone through in this. And you need to check it out. I mean, Amy Wells and Mike Keith do a great job with that. And then, of course, anytime they ask me to come on, I'll contribute, what I can. But I encourage people to look, at Tennessee Titans Online, go to the podcast, also look at, Jim Wyatt's mailbag. And they do a great job of keeping the Titans fans informed. And also, as I say, to me, guys, that's the reason that I really enjoy staying here in Tennessee, because the fans of the Titans and the Vols are just such good people. They're such loyal fans. And look, I think both franchises right now are looking forward to some really big things this fall, and hopefully we can experience all of those together. I mean, I'm really looking forward to that. I heard you guys talk a little bit about the high school football. I hope that comes around too, because I've been able to do some games on my TV 30 with Jonathan Hutton, who's, again, 104.5 The Zone, and then with my TV 30. So I've done some high school games. I go to a high school game every Friday night here in Tennessee, because I just grew up with Friday night football in West Texas. I hope that is able to come around too, guys.
Coach, thank you again for all the time. Take care, stay well, and be safe, and we look forward to catching up with you again in the future.
Thanks, guys. It's my pleasure. This hour went fast, guys. Thanks.
All right, thank you. And that's Dave McGinnis joining us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline. We'll get a break when we return hour number four of Sports Talk. We will catch up with Knoxville native, South Doyle product, and now pitching for the Eagles in Korea. So in the Korean baseball organization, Chad Bell will join us. We also have up next your chance to win. That's right, win with the Sports Fix at 6. That's next as you listen to 99.1, the Sports Animal.